Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today we're going to be discussing Nigeria's Tax Act or Tax Reform 2025. I'm joined by a very special guest, Nana Abu. Nana Abu is currently Senior Manager, Tax Regulatory and People Services at KPMG Nigeria. Nana has an extensive experience, over 12 years experience in tax practices, specializing in tax services to multinational and domestic companies. Her experience covers tax compliance reviews, tax audits, and investigation and tax advisory services. Nana, it's a pleasure to have you join me. And before we continue, I was just going to say Nana is joining us in her own capacity, and not as a staff of KPMG. Nana, it's a pleasure to have you join me today, and I look forward to our conversation.
Thank you very much, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here as well. Thank you.
Brilliant. So let's start off. Nigeria has just signed into law a new tax act. Can you tell us the scope of this act? What is the scope?
Okay. So I think first, right, is to say that the recent tax reforms that were signed off by the president on the 26th of June, 2025, comprise four landmark bills that were signed into law, right? So when I say four, it's not just one act, there are about four, you know, different acts. We have the Nigerian Tax Act 2025, which takes effect 1st of January, 2026. And that tax act consolidates, you know, various tax laws into one piece of legislation, right? And apart from consolidating various tax laws, it also provides guidance, you know, on how those, you know, laws should be, you know, interpreted or understood. It also seeks to also consolidate various taxes, and I'll throw more light on that as we go. And now the other three bills that were also signed into law, you have the Nigerian Tax Administration Bill. That bill just provides a uniform procedure for a consistent and efficient administration of tax laws in Nigeria. So how would the taxes be administered, right? That also takes effect 1st of January 2026. And then the other two tax acts, fiscal tax reforms, covers the Nigerian Revenue Service Establishment Act, which has an effective date of the date that the date the president signed that act into law, which is 26th of June. And what does the Nigerian Revenue Service Establishment Act seek to do? It basically establishes the Nigerian Revenue Service as the sole agency responsible for assessing, collecting, and accounting for the revenue that's accruable to the federal government. So previously we had the FIRS, which is Federal Inland Revenue Service. We had various other agencies, you know, responsible for government accruing government revenue. Right now, it is solely going to be under the Nigerian Revenue Service, making it, you know, a bit easy and simpler to confirm. You know, having to deal with multiple agencies has also been a pain point, you know, for taxpayers over time. And then we have the Joint Revenue Board of Nigeria Establishment Act. And that act basically just establishes the Joint Revenue Board as an agency cut across the federal and state tax authorities. It also establishes the office of what is called the tax on board. And that this tax on board is a, you know, key changer when Nigeria is also trying to align with the standards, global standards and standards across other countries, where you have an independent arbiter who seeks more like the middleman, tries to resolve issues between the taxpayer and, you know, the government when it comes to taxes. The ombudsman, I must say, is not a judge, right? It's just an independent party that seeks to enhance any disputes that would come up between the tax authorities and the taxpayer. So in answering your question, right, I would say that we have four landmark bills hovering around taxes in Nigeria.
Okay, that's very interesting. Let me take, so we've seen from what you mentioned, that means Nigeria, like I used to say to people, like Nigeria pays tax. You know, there's this myth that we rely, not necessarily a myth, that Nigeria is a rent seeking, or we derive our revenue mainly from oil, which is rent seeking, and Nigerians don't pay tax. But what does tax reveal is that we have different taxes that are now being consolidated. So do you think, I'm looking at the positive. So I guess the question I'm asking is, it does seem that this tax presents some positives in that regard. It helps to, so what are the positives and what are the negatives? I guess that's what I'm trying to come to. What are the positives of this tax, and what are the negative connotations or implications?
Okay, so interestingly, right, starting off from the comments that you had around Nigeria being largely oil-driven, right, when it comes to revenue, I think it's important to mention that in recent times, non-oil revenue has been, you know, the significant driver of our revenue. And even coming from the recent reports that was introduced recently, I think over 75%, you know, of our GDP was coming from, you know, the non-oil sector, and taxes played a key role. Predominantly companies' income tax, value-added taxes played some significant role in terms of, you know, the uptick in the numbers, right? And then, you know, looking at the recent acts, right, I would say that while we are getting into the point where we'll see how the implementation will roll out, I think it's optimistic, right, to state that the level of compliance, right, they should see an upward movement in that. Because what the tax law seeks to do is to simplify the process and drive compliance, right? So if you're engaging with another party, for instance, there are certain requirements that the other party that you're engaging with has to have a tax identification number, right? And then automatically when you have a tax identification number, you are largely then brought into the formal sector, right? Irrespective of the fact that you may be earning income that is not taxable, right? But at least there's that record, right? So largely formalizing that informal sector that is largely, you know, out of that, you know, space, right? We should see an uptick in terms of, you know, getting more realistic data in terms of the performance of the economy. Secondly, I think it's important to also mention that there's been, you know, a concession to align with our current reality. So the focus of these reforms, right, I would say to a large extent, is to protect the vulnerable, right? So you have certain threshold of income or profits that are exempt from taxes. Before now, that threshold was lower. So for instance, if you were categorized as a small company, if you had revenue up to 25 million naira, right, you would be exempt from taxes, right? Now that threshold has been extended to about 50 million. Now, why there are considerations to say even the 50 million, right, there's still much, you know, to be looked at in that regard when you look at realities, but at least there's one step in that direction, right? At least there's that step. There's also, even for compensation for loss of office, there was a portion that was exempt that has also been, you know, increased. And then there are stiffer compliance measures now. So if you don't comply, you would have to bear, you know, the brunt of the law, and people wouldn't want to fall, you know, on that end of the stick. And then the process of trying to make everything simpler, right, where before now as a company, if I wanted to really understand what my tax obligations were, I would need to go and check the company's income tax. I would need to go and check what value-added taxes. I would need to go to Stamp Duties Act. I would need to go to capital gains tax and all kinds of, you know, laws. Now I have a single piece of legislation, right, that tells me what taxes are applicable on my income, my profit, or my gains. Right. So that's also is also one step to making that process, you know, easier, you know, for taxpayers, you know, to comply. So I would say, if I look at it from, you know, both perspectives, I would say that the advantages for me, right, outweigh, you know, whatever downside that, you know, all that may have in terms of their perspective. Mm-hmm. But just like I've mentioned, what is really critical, and maybe it's a conversation we'd have as we move on, right, is that implementation. Because as you are aware, executing a law could either make or break, you know, executing an action rather, could either make or break, right, that. So the implementation process in terms of how would these laws be implemented, right? It has to be very, very clear, you know, clearly set out from the beginning in terms of guidelines that the relevant parties will provide, because there's still a lot of, even though the laws appear simpler, there's still a lot of, you know, interpretations here and there as to how it's going to apply to different categories of businesses. So I think it's important that critical phase of implementing, right, is really guarded by the relevant parties, and the feedback also, you know, gained to improve that process.
I agree with you that the Tax Act, it's a laudable initiative, and is one that provides clarity as compared to previously where. But from what you said, I think that benefits, the most benefit that you've mentioned lies within companies. Right? But you also mentioned the vulnerable. So, but if we look at Nigeria, look at the majority of Nigerians are like maybe in the informal sector. Or you look at what companies are we looking at? What's the target? Who are they targeting? Now we're looking at companies. How about those in the informal sectors? The majority of people that don't have jobs, the major people that have, do they have genuine, is there a valid fear that Nigerians?
Okay, so I had used companies. Okay, please could you take that again, because I lost you a couple of seconds ago.
So the last question I think you've lost is, so do people, ordinary people that are working, or do people in the informal sector, do they have a valid, is it legitimate, that fear of how this tax is going to impact of them negatively or adversely? Because we've looked at the benefit from a company cooperative perspective, from a corporate, we've seen the benefit. But what about from the individual workers, small business owners and all of that? What are their fears? Are these fears legitimate? Are they, you know, or is it just, how can you speak to that?
Okay, so, you know, when I started, I mentioned that when you look at the Tax Reform Act, right, it has certain key objectives, right? One of those key objectives, right, with which the Presidential Fiscal Committee on Tax Reforms had also, you know, heightened in the course of their stakeholder engagements, was it was geared towards also protecting the vulnerable, right? Vulnerable in this instance, you know, I would speak to individuals. So if I take individuals, for instance, if you're earning minimum wage, you're clearly exempt from taxes as an individual, right? So clearly you wouldn't be caught under the net as far as your income, you know, is minimum wage, right? Also, there's been also an expansion of the tax exemption threshold. So as an individual, right, if you earn an annual taxable income of, for instance, 800,000 naira, you have a tax rate of 0%, meaning that you're exempt from tax, right? So if as an individual, for instance, your annual income is 3 million, for instance, it means the first 800,000 of your income, right, is exempt from tax, and then you're then taxed on 2.2 million, right? So there's that expansion of tax exempt threshold, right? You also have reliefs, even as an individual, that have been maintained, right? You have the pension. If you're paying pension, you can take a deduction for pension. If you're paying for the National Housing Fund, you can take a deduction. So there are a number of reliefs that are still in place, right, to recognize, you know, some of these payments or outflows as individuals. As small businesses, I also mentioned, you know, when we started to say, as small businesses, if your income, right, your revenue, if it's less than 50 million naira annually, you are categorized as a small company. And when you're categorized as a small company, you're exempt from paying taxes. However, you still have the obligation to file a return. That return will be nil, obviously, right? But it would show that you are indeed a small company, right? Any company that's outside that threshold, you then have to pay taxes. You're also not liable to any minimum tax if you're a small company. So that for the larger group of companies, there's minimum tax, even if you arrive at a loss where you don't have tax payable, but you still pay minimum tax subject to the conditions under the effective minimum tax rule in the new tax law. So even as a small company, you're exempt from CIT, you're exempt from the development levy, which is a new levy, right? You're exempt from, and the law also provides that they would roll out some further guidance for a simplified tax filing process for small companies. Because indeed, if you're not paying taxes, why do I want to go through that hassle of filing returns, doing all of that, right? So there are communication in the law itself. That further communication will be rolled out as to how they can take advantage of the ease of, you know, an easier filing process. Companies, I think there are also benefits for specific sectors, right, within the tax reform. So if, for instance, you're a startup company and you are carrying out agricultural related services, so maybe you're into crop production, you're into dairy or livestock, right? There's an exemption for a 5-year tax holiday for you, right? For even, you know, providing services in that sector, right? So this is also to help ensure that that sector, as you know, we've had issues in the past of inflation-driven pricing as a result of, you know, cost of goods and all of that for basic consumers. So this is also to help shore up that sector and to provide an incentive for that sector. There are also some other incentives, you know, for the health sector, for manufacturing companies, where you have tax credits up to the amount of the taxes that you're paying, subject to certain provisions, right, and the law. So there's also sector-based incentives. There's incentive based on small category, you know, of taxpayers. There are also incentives, you know, to protect those with lower income, like I've mentioned, right? And then, even though I've mentioned that some of the provisions of the law, if to my you know, view, right, some of them to, you know, take into cognizance current realities, or some I'll still say there's more work to be done. And I'll take, for instance, as an employee, right, that earns income, there's, before now we used to have what's called a consolidated relief allowance, right, which could get up onto 1% of your gross income that could be taken as a relief, right? But currently that has been deleted. So you do not have the CRA anymore. What you then have in replacement is what's something called the rent relief. Now, the rent relief, yes, the rent relief, right, is 20% of the annual rent that you pay, subject to a maximum of 500,000, which in my view may not be, you know, if I'm looking at the, especially for those living in the city that pay rent, right? You then ask yourself, if I'm getting a rent relief of just 500,000 of the rent that I pay, right, and I'm living in an apartment where I'm paying 5 million, right, what relief am I really getting? A very minute percentage, right? So some of these things are things that need to be looked at. And if you're the owner of your own residence, automatically you're not going to be entitled to that rent relief because you don't pay rent, right?
And then go ahead,
Michael.
Oh, because go ahead. You're due to be rich already, so you don't need that money.
Interesting. Fair point, which comes back to the focus, right? Which is to say they want to protect the vulnerable, right? So in their view, vulnerable are those that are still paying the meager rent, you know. So
I'll be honest with you. And we're going to go to the interesting part of the questions. I'll be honest with you. This is, tax is good. I've always said it from before that Nigerians are complacent because they believe they don't pay tax, but Nigerians have been paying tax all along. But you pay tax whether you're in Lagos and you're a small trader and there's the local or money lender is you're paying tax. All these things are taxes. So but Nigerians don't know that and then they're complacent. And so now I think the tax might spur people to demand change. So before I come to that place, you mentioned something critical about implementation. That, you know, Nigeria is not the absence of all the laws or policies. Since the Fourth Republic, we've been having all of those reforms. And yet, we've not seen a lot of progress. So I guess my question is, when Goodluck Jonathan was there, we had Sanusi was the CBN governor. And Sanusi came up with this laudable bank reform and to reduce the waste. But it crashed the middle class and put the economy where it is. And then, Obasanjo, we had the needs, the seeds, and all these reforms. But you look at I don't know if you know this, many of these reforms are externally driven. Obasanjo was driven to secure relief from the Paris Club, debt relief, some of these people. So what is behind this new tax act? Who is it internally driven? Is it one where conversations emanating from domestic, or is it an external condition that is, you know, is the external stakeholders that are pushing for these taxes? So have they, and I guess the question is, have they taken into cognizance the local realities in drafting this law?
Okay, so the way I would, you know, want to address that question, right, and that's my own perception, right, I think it's driven, you know, by both internal and external factors, right? I'm sure you'll be aware that over the last few years, we've run at a budget deficit, all right? Yeah. And when you look at the macroeconomic factors and other parameters, you'd find out that we've really struggled, right, with dwindling oil revenue. Right. So that message has been passed on strongly, you know, internally, externally. You're seeing that if you're going to stay at this, you know, budget, you need to do something more. Right. And then what exactly do you need to do more? So that's where, apart from trying to say you're going to attract foreign direct investment, you know, look at your FX balances and the likes, you still have to look at other means, right, you know, to get that revenue. And that's where tax, you know, has come into that picture. And over the last 5 years, I would say from the Finance Act 2019, right, you would see that over the years, there's been a lot more attention to taxes, to generating revenue from taxes, to ensuring that there's accountability, to ensuring that, you know, the cost of collection versus what you're actually getting, you know, there is some connection. Having said that, you still have your obligations, you know, when it comes to debts. You still have other external obligations that you need to, you know, fulfill. If you look at the recent data, you'd see that our growth projections from the World Bank, right, there is some significant, you know, uptick to say that by 2026, they expect a 4.2, you know, growth projection. So what do you think will be driving these growth projections? It will come largely from, you know, the economic activities happening within the country. And then when you have those economic activities happening, that's when you then see, oh, you can get tax revenue. If there are no economic activities, you definitely won't get tax revenue, right? So the I would perceive it to say that external and internal factors, you know, impact the focus on taxes. And even in recent data that we've gotten, if I take a recent report recently from the FIRS's collection, you find out that the FIRS had collected about 22.5 trillion, right, as at September. And their budget is about 21. Right, so you can see that there's significant growth, and that's to let you know that there's focus in that sector. There's focus in that sector. So
Go ahead,
Michael.
Yeah, Nana, you know, sometimes when we talk from economic perspective, we sometimes focus on macro growth, and I was quite surprised when Okonjo-Iweala had and some people that I know that normally would be Okonjo-Iweala would be World Bank or Father Kuka, whom I respect as well, who's considered like a senior colleague, you know, having a positive view of the Tinubu administration. But my concern as an academic and as an analyst is to look at why do we so much focus? We've been focusing in the last 60 years since many African countries gained independence. Why do we focus so much on macro goods, World Bank driven projections, IMF driven projections? This hasn't translated in any way in the lives of ordinary people. So, and then you mentioned the monies that have been recovered by FIRS, 22 trillions, and all of this money. How do we move from there to real life practical translation in the life of the people in terms of, like, so if we look at this tax now, I guess, where is the protection or guarantee that this tax is going to not serve paying or World Bank debts and all of that, serving to provide an infrastructure, you know, which are considered real-time growth, like the good roads, the good health, and all of that? So where is there any breach in this place where there is a specific thing, this percentage of this tax that's going to be derived will be plunge into education, we'll be plunged into this, we'll be directed into this. Do we have that establishing those in those in that act or in any guidance within that act.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you're very spot on, right, when you've mentioned that people need to really see that the taxes that I'm paying, right, I can see the dividend of that, because tax, as I would say, is a social contract, right? So I need to know that I'm paying this level of tax and I'm seeing this development, seeing this infrastructure in place, right? So people need to also hold the government accountable. That's the honest truth. We cannot just stay in our bedrooms and say, oh, I paid this amount of tax, I'm tired, I'm seeing this, this deficit in this area. We need to all hold the government accountable. And when they see that, you know, strong feedback, you know, from the populace, then yes, they would chart the way, you know, in terms of the right direction. Now, specifically speaking to the Nigerian tax reforms, yes, there are some specific provisions. You know, when I started speaking, I mentioned that government is also looking to see the growth of certain sectors, and hence is also focused on providing incentives, tax incentives to those sectors. So if you're not paying taxes, whatever revenue that you're getting, you're applying it back into your business and growing, right? That's the expectation. Now, in terms of certain sectors, right, you have this, what is called the development levy, right, which is currently, based on the new law, it's 4% of your accessible profits as a Nigerian company. So if you're a non-resident company, you're not, you know, liable. If you're a small company, you're not liable, right? Now, any other company is liable.
4%. Yeah, so you were talking about the sharing, the development levy and the sharing formula, you were saying.
Yes. So part of the income that is going to be generated from companies paying the development levy of 4% of accessible profits is to be allocated across, you know, different sectors. So you have allocations that will go to education, a significant portion of that, because the development levy is basically a change from what we used to have, the tertiary education tax, right, where the income from that sector is supposed to be channeled towards the education sector, right? Now that has been lumped up with other sectors like the science and engineering, you know, levies, the NITDA levies. So now that all of that has been consolidated into the development levy, allocations is supposed to be made to cyber, you know, security, to security and defense. Allocation is supposed to also be made to education sector, right? And then the information technology sector as well. So there are clear sharing, you know, like allocation formulas within the Tax Reform Act. And since that information is very clearly put out there, it's for us to check when they make their annual publications or annual reports to be sure that indeed, if you've generated X amount from development levy, and then we're looking at each of these sectors to see how much was actually taken from the development levy to these sectors, knowing that the law has said, oh, this percentage should go to education, which comes back to my initial comment of holding the government accountable. Because if you put all of that in the law, who is checking, who is ensuring that, you know, this is being executed, stated, or as codified in the law?
Yeah. But Anna, there's something that is, so just briefly, this development levy, is it a component of the tax, or is it another tax within the tax that companies are expected to pay? Did you hear what I said?
When you say, is it another tax? Yes, I got what you said.
Let me tell you, taxes and taxes. Yeah, let me tell why I'm saying this. So you could provide a much wider. So in the Niger Delta, you had the petroleum, they had the petroleum trust fund and the petroleum stuff. So 60% of NNPC is owned by, you know, the government. They have the multinational companies and all of that. And the multinational company is supposed to pay in some certain levy. So, and that again, what that did was it created, it became weaponized. You see the can you hear me? You see that the companies would then concentrate development in in certain communities where they have interests, where oil producing communities, and they were pitting the communities against one another. And then again, it was a transfer of responsibilities. They were shifting responsibilities, the government shifting responsibility to the companies, whereas the government should be the main provider of this development responsibility. So when there's an issue, when the people feel like, oh, there's issue in the community, they go burn down or they disrupt the activities of the multinational companies. So what I'm saying, in essence, bring it to this tax one. The generality of the tax should be towards providing public goods. My question is, in the Niger Delta, the government has these arrangements. It was actually in the law where maybe NNPC, the government has 60%, and there's this specific development stuff where each of the multinational oil companies will provide about 3% of their development, whatever it is, for the development of the people. So it became something that was weaponized, where the multinational companies might want to concentrate development only in areas where they have oil interests. And then they were pitting communities against one another. That's on one end. Then on the other end, they transferred responsibility to the multinational oil companies, where when the communities feel like there's a need, they go shut down their instrument, rather than the government being the sole, being the main provider of social goods or general goods. So if I'm looking at this tax, like we mentioned, is a social contract. So the generality of a tax should be providing social goods. So are we saying, from what you said, even though we should have certain percentage that are targeted towards, okay, let's say 2% education, the generality of the tax should be towards providing social good. So, but this development fee that is, are they saying that only this fee is targeted or dedicated towards this development? Is that what you're saying? Or is the generality of the tax revenue that is being generated, is it for public good?
Okay. So the generality of the taxes that are to be generated, right, are supposed to be deployed for growth and development, right? And most of the time, the revenue generated, right, I mentioned initially, is also supposed to be aligned towards the budget as well, because the projections and the budget also place reliance on the expected revenue or earnings from taxes, right? So there would obviously, you know, be clear-cut, you know, guidance as to certain key sectors that whatever earnings, either coming from taxes, you know, or from, you know, other inflows, how it will be channeled, right? The specific comment I had around the development levy was because of the comment you raised earlier, right, where you mentioned that there are certain sectors, right, that government should obviously, you know, focus on. And that was why I mentioned the development levy. Right, development levy, clearly there was an outline, a guidance as to how it should be allocated. And before we got to the development levy, I had also mentioned that we had different taxes previously. So before now, as a company, you would pay the tertiary education tax if you were a resident company, or if you were not a small company, you wouldn't pay. But any other company, you would pay what's called a tertiary education tax. There was also a formula as to how this should be allocated to education. Right, but the question is, how did we hold the government accountable? Right, which comes back to that initial comment. We also had before, for companies operating in the technology sector, we had the NITDA levy, we also had the NASENI levy for companies in the banking, the financial institutions. They had various levies that has been consolidated into the development levy. But there are allocations as to whatever earnings that come out of the development levy should be tailored or allocated to certain sectors. It doesn't mean that, you know, sectors that have not been specifically earmarked under the development levy would not get, you know, infrastructure if that has already been, you know, set or laid down with respect to, you know, the budget allocations for respective sectors. As I mentioned, the revenue earnings are not just tied to taxes, even though taxes plays, you know, a significant role, you know, in helping to meet the budget. It's not only tied to taxes. There's revenue from oil, there's FDI, right? But the question then, right, is, how have we held the government accountable to ensuring that the key sectors, right, that need this infrastructure deficit, that these funds are channeled there? It comes back to the comment that I heard of. Everyone, now that you know that your leg is in the door, right, everyone checking to ensure transparency and accountancy. Even the new Tax Administration Act provides you know, a clear explanation to say that the government has to release a report annually to show what has been earned, you know, and how all of these have been deployed. So it's for everyone to, you know, have that interest at heart to follow through those conversations, right? Have a voice in there. Otherwise, we'll come back to the same, conversations to say, oh, I'm paying taxes, I'm even paying more or less, but I'm not really seeing you know, the dividend of that.
Yeah, very interesting. You mentioned the independent ombudsman. I don't know how independent our tax ombudsman is going to be. But, you know, we've been talking about Nigeria is not the absence of all of this law. It's holding government accountable. And again, for people to be able to hold the government accountable in the more advanced world, it's usually a citizen or citizens that are aware, are educated, critically educated enough, and they have certain rights, maybe have freedom of information where you could demand this, where or right to protest or right to do that. But looking at Nigeria, how much of this, I know you mentioned that there's a provision within there to provide some kind of transparency, but how much awareness or education is being carried out, or what was carried out before or is being carried out to make the people aware of this, of their rights? And also, if we're also looking at, on the one hand, we're seeing repression, because with every reform, even during Obasanjo, when Obasanjo had the reforms in the IBB, Babangida doing the reforms, it always comes with repressive measures. So how do we, on the one hand, also looking at what happened in Kenya with the financial tax bill and how the youths are responding to these macro level reforms. So how do we guard against such? How do we create a balance where people can have that kind of citizen government engagement to make sure there's transparency, to make sure there's enough awareness and consciousness around these things? We've seen that with reforms like this, they usually are accompanied with repressive measures. We saw it in the IBB in the immediately after the the 1980s recession of the 1980s, and then came up with the World Bank. There's always repression, and you had student protests and all of that. We've seen recently in Kenya, we saw with the finance bill. We've seen in Madagascar now where the youth is. So we've had the Gen Zs, the youths now that are, you know, they don't have the patience of all of these. They don't want to hear all of that. They want to see practical, real life impact. So how does this translate? Or how does the government provide? So I guess the question is, should there be a tax transparency bill separately where people have the right to maybe freedom of information bill, people have the right to see how this, you know, track all of this stuff? Is that what people want? Because look at, people want transparency, they want accountability, and they are demanding it across, and there are consequences. So how does Nigeria prevent what is happening elsewhere? Can Nigeria, what lessons can Nigeria learn in all of these reforms?
Okay. So I think the better way to put it, right, is the lessons, right? Because when you talk about prevention, then that's another discussion. So what lessons, you know, can be learned? Mm. And even, you know, taking it away from tax, even in recent times, even in Nigeria, right, we've seen the younger generation, you know, come up to demand change, you know, to come up to demand action, more responsiveness from the government, right? Mm-hmm. So I know that with the Tax Reform Act, one key thing that I would applaud the committee that, you know, put all of these laws together, right, is that level of stakeholder engagement, right? We've seen that, you know, play out, you know, since when those bills were before, you know, the legislative houses, right? We've seen that level of engagement where they called for different sessions. And even after these bills have been signed, they are not resting on their hours, right? We've seen them, you know, engage stakeholders, right? Recently, you know, we heard of engagement with the diaspora community, because some of them were raising concerns around taxing of their revenue, even why those revenue were earned outside of the country, right? Yeah. We've seen issues around capital gains tax, right, of stakeholders saying, you know, that rate, we're moving from a 10% rate to a 30% rate, that's significant. So we've seen that presidential committee have sessions with them and making promises, right, that as implementation guidelines are rolled out, they would get input from these stakeholders, you know, before those guidelines or circulars in terms of how these would be implemented, how it is, you know, before they roll out. So we've seen some level, right, I'll use that word sparingly, we've seen some level of that engagement, right, where they want to elicit feedback, they want to, you know, ensure that they're carrying relevant stakeholders, you know, along. Otherwise, you come to a point where you may come to a dead end, right, where you have made some projections, you know, based on certain parameters. And then when it comes to implementation, you find out that it's a different ballgame, right? Yeah. So there's that level of engagement, which calls to mind, right, that they know that the stakeholders have a stake. They know they need to consider those stakeholders. So I mentioned from the beginning that we'll see how, you know, the implementation phase rolls out, because for me, that's critical. It's one thing to have a law in place, right, put those laws in place, but the implementation phase is absolutely critical. And we're going to see how that will play out, you know, from January 2026.
Let me speak on that. Let's end on that note. So this is what I say. From my own perspective, I would say this tax act, like, I'm critical of, because I come from a critical tradition in my discipline and training. So, but when I see where something that is positive or has its perspective, I will also give credit to it and say this has a prospect of moving Nigeria very, very fast in terms of advancing Nigeria. So the question is this. Let's assume Nana Abu is an impartial mediator and you're not either on the side of the government or the people. So you speak directly to the people, those that have fear or concern and of, you know, the intricacies of the tax that have negative perception of that. So now let me ask you the last questions, and I apologize for the disruption in the network. So if you are an impartial mediator, so, you know, see yourself as Nana Abu as an impartial mediator, and you were to advise the people that have concerns and worries about this tax act and what implications it has for them, their daily life and whatever, how would you allay them of their fears? How would you tell them the merits of this? And also on the government, how would you advise them on how to make these tax efficient, effective, and useful for public good?
Thank you, Michael, for that question. I think for a start, for those that have fears or concerns about the, you know, recent tax reforms, I think the key question, right, would be what exactly are their fears or concerns, right? In order for me to be, as an impartial, you know, mediator, for me to address that question, it would be good to know what exactly are their concerns. So if, for instance, you have an individual, you know, worried that my income is going to be taxed, the question would be, do you fall under the category that is exempt, or do you fall under the, I would say, the affluent? Because based on the progressive tax regime in Nigeria, certain tax bands have a higher tax rate, right? So if you fall under the affluent, then the question is, what are you giving back to your society? Because the regime now is a progressive regime, right? So if you are the weak or the vulnerable or the low income earners, then literally, you know, a large portion of your income would be exempt. So question would be, what is the concern or worry, right? When one has a sense of what the concern or worry is, then you're better informed, you know, to be able to allay any fears or concern, you know, in that regard. You know, and I must say, right, it's even as an, you know, independent mediator, the government is the one that this the responsibilities for these laws, you know, rest with. So that responsibility is on them, right, to ensure that, you know, that concern, the worry, they elicit feedback on what exactly are the concerns, and then they then have sessions, you know, for us to address those concerns, right? But I would say that I think it's important, right, for everyone that has a concern or worry. One thing that is critical is that the presidential committee is on the tax reforms, right? They are very open to feedback, and they've acted on feedback, you know, a number of times. There was the time they had the concerns around the surcharge, which was like a 5% levy on chargeable fossil fuel, right? You know, they came out strongly to say, no, yes, it's in the law, but we put in the law that we will provide an effective date when that will take effect, meaning it's not happening yet until we say it's going to happen, right? So it's important to know that if there are any fears or concerns, they should be channeled to the appropriate quarters and it will be taken on, right? And then the question around, you know, for government, you know, what's that feedback for government? I've mentioned, you know, some of the pluses, you know, that we've seen with this reforms where even after this act has been signed, there've been a lot of fora, there've been a lot of sessions that the Presidential Committee on Tax Reform have been having to intimate people, to inform people, right, to change the narrative. Because sometimes you just hear people say, oh, there's this issue, and then you hear that they come out and say, no, this is not it, this is what we mean, right? So we expect, you know, further guidance. I've mentioned that it's critical that if there are any concerns, so if any stakeholder has a concern in respect of their income, their profit, the gains, it's important to table that, right, before the Presidential Committee, who are the ones coming up with these guidelines with relevant authorities, right, to say, state what your concerns are so that it can be addressed as they come up with guidelines. So there may be things that they've not foreseen because they are not the ones that it's going to impact. You know, somebody can sit down and draft a law, but the actual party that law concerns, right, will be the one to tell you, no, because of the model of my business, because of the structure of my business, right, this would impact me this way. So you need to look at this as well. So I think there's a need for active engagement, right? Yes, the laws have been, you know, signed off, but there has to be active engagement, you know, post the sign off to get feedback as to how each of the provisions, you know, impact different sectors, different individuals, different categories of taxpayers, right? So whatever your concerns are, please, I think it's important to note that there's that room to engage the government through the Presidential Committee, right? To table your worries, table your fears. And they've also mentioned, right, that the setup of the tax ombudsman is another channel. Right, we didn't have that before. We've seen that across countries like South Africa, Kenya, you know, we've not had that before. So even with the rollout of the tax ombudsman or tax ombud, it's not very clear, right, that indeed, you know, the objective will be achieved, but it's a step in the right direction, right? It's a step in the right direction. And then they're open to those feedback. And the law, right, I think I'll leave on a lasting note, right? The law is flexible. And that's why over the years, we've had changes coming from Finance Act 2019 all the way to Finance Act 2023 before we got onto this recent tax reform act, right? So the law is flexible. If there are things that haven't been considered, right, and those concerns are valid, right, and they're tabled before the appropriate channels, right, the law can be flexible, it can be changed. So I think it's important to point that.
Nana, I'm very, very great.
Michael.
Good. This is a very, very rich, deep, and useful comment. I really appreciate, despite the small challenge we've had with you know, with technology today, I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's been rich, it's been insightful, and you've been a good mediator in your advice, and we've made progress. You know, as someone that is a social scientist that has written a lot and researched Nigeria, I can admit we've made progress, and hopefully we can see that progress being translated into the lives of ordinary people. But I thank you for your time, and I wish you all the best, and we really appreciate your rich insight, and I'll be in touch. I'll be in touch shortly after this.
Thank you very much, Michael. It's been a pleasure being here and having these discussions with you. Thank you.
Same here. Have a beautiful day.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Thank you for joining me today. Thank you, and join me to thank our guest, Nana Abu, for her very laudable insights and rich insight into the controversial tax reform legislation in Nigeria. For now, stay blessed, and I'll see you shortly.